Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, I'm Sophie Ellis-Bextor, and welcome to Spinning Plates, the podcast where I speak to busy working women who also happen to be mothers about how they make it work. I'm a singer, and I've released 7 albums in between having my 5 sons, aged 16 months to 16 years, so I spin a few plates myself. Being a mother can be the most amazing thing. It can also be hard to find time for yourself and your own ambitions. I want to be a bit nosy and see how other people balance everything. Welcome to Spinning Plates. Morning. Well, it is for me. I'm speaking to you from Sunday morning. It's the middle of a bank holiday weekend here in the United Kingdom. And I haven't got tons of plans, actually. Richard's been away on tour with The Feeling. And so I've been sort of pottering with the kids, really, yesterday, just following our noses where the day went, and today I've got a gig, and tomorrow I know my mum and my sister are going to come for supper, but I haven't actually got any like solid plans. So this morning my 12-year-old's like, what are we doing today, what are we doing tomorrow? And I'm like, not really a whole lot actually planned, but the sun is shining, so maybe we'll get outside today. That'd be nice. I'm so ready for spring. I'm so bored of rain and cold days. So yeah, get on it, United Kingdom, get on it, London. I'm also going through this, I think I've told you already, this crazy sorting out phase where I keep organising and sorting. I don't know if anybody would relate to this, but while I've been doing this crazy sorting, there's a bit where you get rid of a load of things and things look a little bit worse. I wonder if it's because you kind of got your, everything's in their home, and then you take a third of it away and everything just suddenly looks a bit like, I don't know, it's not anchored in the same way it was with all your bits and bobs. Even if there were things you don't really need. So anyway, I'm persevering. I really, 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 really want to just get it all done. I'm so in the mood. I think I'm trying to capitalise on this slight lack of sentimentality that I have at the moment, because it means it's easier to get rid of things. And I also had a bonkers moment on Friday where one of my kids having a sleepover, and while he was downstairs sleeping in the den with his mate, I reconfigured all the furniture in his room at like 11:30 at night. quite wild, really. I don't know what this is about, some strange energy I have at the moment. I've also been doing lots of songwriting. I wrote how many songs last week? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5 songs last week. A couple of which I think actually might be friends for a little while. I'm pretty pleased with how they turned out. Got another songwriting couple of sessions in the next few weeks. Such a nice way to spend the days. I absolutely love it. And I've been working with some lovely people. And then yesterday, I played some of my new stuff to my eldest, and he was being positive. And my 15-year-old was being very, very dismissive. It's like, do you like this one? No. Do you like this one? No. Can you pass me the ketchup? He was eating a bacon sandwich. He did not have much interest in my fares. It's okay. I don't mind. Not my fares, my wares. Sorry. Morning brain. Anyway, it's enough waffling around for you. I have a lovely guest this week who served up Spinning Plates remit sort of on a plate, really, because she's a singer who has now become a mum for the first time in 2020 and has written a whole album about motherhood. So, you know, when we're looking at working women who happen to be mothers and how motherhood and career have influenced one another, it's like pretty damn peachy how this has all worked out. So I'm talking about Natasha Khan, who is known as Bat for Lashes, and she's superb. I've been a fan of her for a very long time, since the beginning, actually, of her solo career. I love her voice, her drama, obviously her music, where she's coming from. I think it's just gorgeous. So many beautiful soundscapes, and some songs like Daniel and Desert Man and What It Feels Like, What's a Girl to Do. They're songs that are in my, you know, some of my favourite songs. I play them a lot. And her new album is absolutely beautiful. It's really, really gorgeous. And was all inspired by the birth of her daughter, Delphi, who was born in 2020. And so in and out of lockdowns and in LA, where Natasha lives back now in the UK, but she was living in LA at the time. So in this, you know, different world, different landscape, new baby, strange things happening in the world, she's written this gorgeous landscape of songs all about matrescence and the act of what happens to you when you become a mother. And it's very beautiful. So it was an absolute joy to sit down and talk with her about it. And, you know, a couple of the songs have already come out, and the album itself is released in June, and it's very pretty. So check out what's already out there, because it's lovely. Really, really gorgeous, if you haven't already, of course. And it was just a pleasure to talk to her, and I will now cease my ramble and see you on the other side of our chat. See you in a bit. Well, firstly, it's so nice to see you. Thank you, for coming over. So you're about to release your sixth record. How are you feeling at this point? What are you good with your this stage of release?
We're sort of a few weeks into it now, so the third single's just come out. So I'm in a flow. When the first single came out, it was quite a big deal, because it had been 5 or 6 years since I'd
That's pretty done that. Pretty big gap, actually. But I suppose get into everything that went on in that gap. But actually, that's nice that you don't feel like the album is a separate beast. Then once you're into like the first single, you're already in the flow of it.
Yes,
I think for me, I always get nervous when the whole album comes out. But maybe that's the single for me is like, I don't know, like introducing the first couple of people from the cast.
Yeah.
So I always get like, as it builds up. But it's exciting, and it's always a big deal, isn't it, when a record comes out?
Yeah, it's like a little baby that you have to then give out into the world. But I feel this one is so personal and so raw and intimate that I think because 3 songs have come out now, I'm kind of like used to that level of exposure.
Yeah.
And so now when the rest of it comes out, I think people will get the full picture, which sort of gives me reassurance that they know what world they're going into.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Do you think this is possibly the most sort of intimate then of your records?
I think so. Yeah. I suppose on the last 5 records, I've used definitely, you know, a lot of storytelling and narratives and characters that I've given names to, and for each one I've like written a script or a novella or some kind of story that goes with the album. So it's not that I've hidden behind those things, but I've used those things as a way to like present the work.
Yeah, it's inspiration, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's really nice, isn't it, to do the storytelling part. But I think with this one, because it's about the birth of my daughter, there was nothing to hide, or I didn't want to hide really, but it just has come so directly from that intimate place that it is quite different. It feels just much more raw and honest, and or just pure, I suppose. It's not
and also huge. I mean, it's such a rich pot to delve into, because the idea of mother and motherhood and all the ways you can cut through it, all the angles you can take it, it gives you a lot. It's bountiful, isn't it, as a sort of the symbolism of it, down to the actual very, the domestic, the way it affects, you know, actual day-to-day life. It can kind of start off small and go huge, or go the other way around.
Yeah, I felt both of those things really grew, like the domestic, mundane, repetitive, grounding sort of activities were really apparent, obviously, especially with a newborn at the time I started writing the album. And I suppose I didn't realise, but I was craving that as a travelling musician and someone that was very, like, troubadour-y in a lot of ways. I didn't quite realise how much I needed those roots again. And it took me back to my childhood and then brought up a lot of stuff for healing, like a lot of, you know, generational things that have been passed down. It sort of unlocked this Pandora's box of very old kind of domestic themed stuff while simultaneously having this like epic existential like awakening about the fact that when she was born, you know, I kind of saw her coming through this portal and coming out into my arms. And when that happened, I just had this massive realization that we all come through and go back out of that place. And I suddenly felt like this connectivity between all humankind and all living animals and nature and everything. I was just like, okay, so this is like a spiritual awakening that's happening right now, where
like a pulse through all of the...
There's a pulse and we're all connected.
Ancestry and the past and the present and the future.
Exactly. And just that it was very... it was awe-inspiring and humbling at the same time. I love this. Yeah, it's just this whole thing about you're almost like bigger than you ever were and smaller than it. That movement between the largeness of your heart and like how much you can love something and then how suffocating and intense and small it can also feel. So it's like you're really stretching yourself in a way.
That's really well put. And I think I remember when I became a mum, I felt like so many of the things I was experiencing ranged from this sort of universal themes, the stuff that suddenly connects you to conversations and thoughts and practices and emotions that must have been going on, you know, stretching back. But also, at the same time, you're the first person to have had that baby. That's the first time they've existed.
Yeah.
So it's something brand new, totally new and unfurling.
Very personal to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And working out what kind of parent you want to be, what priorities you have, and also as you say, looking back to your childhood and thinking through aspects of it, and working out which things you think, I would love to bring some of that with me if I can, and other things we think, I can see that through different eyes now.
And just how sort of I feel like society's really moved on.
Definitely.
You know, my mum had me in 79 when she was 21, and I had Delphi in 2020 when I was 40. So there was like a very different approach, and the way we've moved on with mental health and understanding attachment and just the capabilities and the support my mum had were very different to what I have. And it's passing out like how what you want to bring with you. My mum was always singing in the car. She took me to Michael Jackson concert when I was 9, and you know, like, she was a sexy, cool, fashionable young mum and always fun and like wanting to do things with us. And so I feel like that, you know, I sing with Delphi in the car and I feel like, oh, it's passing down like this nice fun aspect. But then, you know, all the bits that she was so nervous about or didn't understand about rearing a baby.
Are you the eldest in your...
Yes. Mm-hmm. I sort of empathise with those things, but also having been a preschool teacher and stuff, I think I was already kind of ahead in the next generation, you know, sort of moving it forward.
Yeah, and also I suppose you've had friends that have become parents and you're sort of getting to see that change in them too.
Exactly,
and you're right, I think that we talk a lot more about parenthood, I feel like, in a sort of front and centre way than maybe they did in like late 70s, early 80s, when it was just a thing you would go off and do a bit more quietly.
Yeah.
Maybe your support system be closer to home.
Mm.
But now it's so open to have conversations about parenthood and how it affects people and finding support and the, you know, the joys, but also the things that are the anguish of bits, or just the sort of, you know, the bits where people just need to vent a little bit and go, this is...
Some of it's really hard. And I think, you know, just all the different types of families nowadays, because when I was little, my parents divorced and my mum, as a single mum, brought up 3 children on her own, and me and Delphi's father are separated, but we're like best mates and he lives 8 minutes down the road and we co-parent in this very sort of like connected way. And, you know, I feel like sometimes, you know, when we were younger, divorce and all of that was sort of a real failure. Whereas now there's all these sort of new options and more unconventional ways of like trying to create that family dynamic and love a child. And
yeah, I think that's true. I think there's a modern perspective.
There's a bit less pressure, although I do feel like, you know, that traditional thing of like the family unit and all of that, you know, it's something that you want and you aspire to, but it's just, yeah, I think life is, it always turns out differently than you expect.
It does.
For me.
But did you think motherhood was always something you wanted?
Yes, it was, yeah. Actually. I think I had a lot of things to work through, and so I ended up having her later, but I'm actually really glad I did it then, because I had such a full career and there's nothing to kind of, I don't resent anything or I don't feel kind of held back by anything. But, being a more mature mum is, I quite like it. I feel more sort of confident in myself. Maybe it took me a bit longer to get there or something.
Yeah, I just think that however the cards fall is the life you know.
And exactly.
There's different ways that affects things. But actually, there's wonderful aspects to all of it. I've got quite a few girlfriends that became first-time mums in there when they were like 40, 41. Mm. And it's been really lovely to see the approach, and it's made me think a little bit, reflect a little bit, because...
Were you quite young when you started?
So I was 25 when I had my first.
Right.
And it's amazing, been amazing listening to your album. I've been lucky enough to listen to all of it.
Mm.
And it's so beautiful. I love what you've created. And it made me think so much because I kept my motherhood completely out of my music when I became a mum. I consciously, I was like, I'm not writing any songs about being a mum. Not because I was embarrassed or ashamed or anything, but because I needed my work to fill this separate space. But I feel like if I'd been open to it in a different way, and possibly as well as a pop artist, it's a more clunky juxtaposition. Well, certainly was then. I felt like... But I love how you've been so open to this, to the thematics that come along with it. And I was thinking about the fact that you were also in this lockdown period. So it's 2020, you have your home birth, you're in a country, which I know you've been living in then for a little minute, but it still wasn't, you know,
far
where you're
away from family.
Exactly, yeah. So you could just sort of really delve into these thoughts in a way that you might not have been had the same way of approaching it if it had been part of the bustle of lots of other things.
Yeah, I do look back on it. I get goosebumps just now talking about it because I think I've realised in hindsight that a lot of my girlfriends are trying to go through that same process with the pressure of like working right up to the due date and just like all the things of like, am I going to fall out of the workforce or, you know, like...
Absolutely, yeah.
And at that point, I didn't realise quite how lucky I was that COVID was obviously quite an anxious, difficult time for lots of people. But for me, I was pregnant. And so I kind of took that opportunity and ran with it. Mm. And we locked down, but I went inwards and I did a lot of meditation and connecting with the baby and loads of pregnancy yoga, loads of walking. We went out to the redwoods. We went swimming in lakes. We just did everything we could to immerse in nature. And I felt this massive love and reconnection with nature. And obviously being in LA, I was really lucky because it's so outdoorsy and sunny and you're just out all the time. But it was sort of this utopian moment where I felt like this child's, you know, I'm growing this child, the world has stopped, and like I don't have anything that I feel I'm missing out on or like I need to catch up to. And so you're right, I just sort of embraced it. And because it was such a reconnection and so nourishing in that way, I just felt like I couldn't not make music about it because it was so profound. And it wasn't working on just, like you say, it's that unique child that's your own. So there's that very personal story. But the layers that were kind of occurring to me that were really vast and like reaching out to all of our lives and just like what I feel about, you know, the dwindling of like biodiversity and our lack of connection with nature, how we live in concrete jungles and the rise in stress and anxiety and mental health issues and, you know, like a lot of nuclear families sort of struggling in their tiny unit and not really having that community. It kind of, all the themes of lockdown mixed with pregnancy created this whole like manifesto of like, we need to do this more. We need, you know, like I just felt suddenly had these huge feelings and thoughts about how I'd been living my life that wasn't very nurturing.
Yeah, and possibly I think some of the things you've been talking about, you don't necessarily discover those. I mean, becoming a parent is quite a seismic thing when it happens to somebody. It's such a massive before and after. But obviously you can reach all these thoughts regardless, because we all come from something. We all come from somewhere. Mm. We're all part of the line. When you get a bit older, you start thinking about legacy and what you prioritise, what matters to you, who you surround yourself with. And that thing of the world stopping in that way. I mean, it sounds like that thing of when you're describing, you know, being in the lakes, I'm thinking it sounds kind of magical, actually, because you really can have a sort of perspective that's quite unique. But then that can come to people just by the choices they're making in life and thinking, hang on a minute, now that I'm at this point, my life, do I still want to prioritise work as much? Who am I actually, what are my friends like? How do I hope people remember me? What am I leaving for the next person? You don't necessarily, you don't have to discover that through
being a small person. No, and I think people have spiritual awakenings all the time.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes it's through the death of a parent or someone close to you, or sudden death, or, like moving country or changing your career. But maybe it's also interesting having a baby at 40 that I'm sort of on the cusp of like my midlife crisis astrologically. They're like, you're heading into midlife crisis territory. And I feel like I wouldn't call it a crisis, but a repositioning or something.
Yeah. I found re-evaluation. Quite a lot of quite powerful. But
yeah, I found it really powerful. I'm finding it really positive. But I think that for me, having Delphi was sort of this, such a potent way of doing it, that it kind of threw me into something quite deeply. But I agree with you. I don't think you have to be a mother to understand these themes. I think the themes that have come up for me is that we all are connected. We're all part of Mother Nature, like the greatest mother. And that whole mother wound of like how we treat nature or how we see ourselves as part of it or not part of it is universal. And so I with this record, I was like, you know, some people were writing in saying, you know, my mum passed away last year, and listening to this is like giving me so much comfort. And then other people that are like, I'm really feeling this disconnection from my place in the world. And so I almost made the album as it's a celebration of my own personal experience, but I think the mother witch archetype that kind of sits over it all was my feeling that suddenly my heart was so huge that I wanted to like hold everybody and nurture everyone in this sort of maternal balm that I wanted to like put around people, because I realised that we're all capable of this unconditional love, and it's so regenerative. It doesn't take from you, it gives you more and more and more. And suddenly I was like, I want to look after everybody, you know, like that feeling.
I totally understand that though.
Yeah.
That feeling of like shedding parts of yourself to be kind of open to, I think actually in a way that's part of what prompted me to start these conversations in a way as well, because you get this lovely feeling of through the conversations you sort of hear other people's stories, their experiences, the wisdom and empathy and just that connection with everybody. I really like it.
Yeah.
And I feel that sometimes even when I'm on stage, that kind of heartbeat feeling of just like everybody there, like, oh.
Definitely.
And I wasn't expecting that with getting older, but I really like it.
Yeah. I think there's, you know, I think women, as they get older, regardless of having children or not, there's, you know, so much beauty and wisdom that comes out of it. And I think society is not very good at recognising that. But in other cultures, they, you know, women are revered the older they get.
Yes.
And I do think that there becomes that sort of, you know, they talk about like the divine masculine presence is very holding and just kind of containing and present. But I also think the divine feminine presence is that too. It just, you kind of become like, once you've parented yourself internally and you feel like more secure, which I think happens later, there's more to give and there's more to hold in other people. And I suppose I'm stepping into that, like, between the maiden and maiden mother and the crone, like it's all happening inside of me. But there's this really interesting, like powerful wish to just love and hold a bit more, other people a bit more.
And I think it, because of the nature of our jobs, we are so lucky because we get to encourage that part of us. We're sort of observant of how we're feeling about things and how things shift and what we're open to. I love the fact that you can have a profound thought or a feeling or awareness about what's happening in your life or how you're feeling about something, and you're able to channel it into actually producing something, you know, music. Like, it's just the best thing, because not everybody's lucky enough to be able to take that and then actually make it part of something they create that day. It's a really, it's a real privilege, isn't it?
It is a real privilege. I'm really aware of that as well. And yeah, just transmuting off. I mean, I think my career started transmuting a lot of pain into, you know, trying to make sense of a lot of difficulty and putting it into music. But over a lifetime, it's really liberating to feel that it's now translating into things that I'm celebrating or like that are generating a different kind of energy. So and I think everybody, you know, regardless of what job you have, I think there is a way to take those reflective, or to encourage those reflective moments and to put them into something.
I think
I think the way society is set up for most people, that it doesn't really allow that space, and the same about like allowing the space for, you know, like really descending into being pregnant and having a baby, or really, you know, really taking time to grieve the loss of someone. Like, I feel like everything moves so quickly. For me, this new album as well is, there's quite a lot of, like quiet, contemplative music on there, because there's almost like this underlying encouragement to slow down and feel things and sense the air in the room and just like be quiet and reflect, because that's been my go-to method for years and years. Is as the world gets faster and more intense, it's almost like I want to you know, acknowledge how important still it is to be in those moments. And I think the album, you know, there's songs like The Midwives Have Left when Delphi was born at like 2:45 in the morning or something.
That's such an evocative title as well.
Yeah,
that first moment when you're
alone.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the we were in our bedroom and we had like these double doors that go out to outside, and it was that sort of like twilighty light, and my partner and the baby was asleep on my chest, and they left, and I was just like, there was this melancholic moment, this like liminal space between who I was and who I was going to be. And I just felt this like, I felt engulfed by this, I don't know, just very foreign feeling.
Yeah.
And it was something that I had to sit with for a while, because I always had so much adrenaline from the birth and stuff.
Yeah.
I didn't want to, couldn't go to sleep. And I had this baby on my chest, like, you know, there's all this excitement. But writing that song was so much about those in-between moments between you being someone you were and who you might become. It's like that transformational cycle, and just in, you know, I think just in the act of listening to that, it's hopefully like putting a little punctuation or some brackets around, like, take time to feel the space in this, even if it's uncomfortable or foreign to you, because it's not going to last. Like, there's another song, Her First Morning, which was like, a few hours later we wake up and it's a brand new day and it's a new life, and it was like so full of joy. But I think my decision to put those tracks on the album, even though at times I was like, are people going to find it a bit boring or a bit quiet, or there's no singing in it, or it's not got a verse and chorus, you know, there's these judgments that come up. But no, I think there's a place for that, especially nowadays.
Yeah, and also I think, you know, you're a creative person who's earned the space to make the music that you want to be making, you know, without people will go where you lead them, you know. You've built up to this is album number 6, you know, you have to, there has
I'm
to
allowed.
Be yeah there has to
I'm
be
allowed.
An allowance of that. And it's such a diary entry, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you know, when you were thinking about The Midwives Had Left, you know, you didn't know you were necessarily going to get to her first dance, and you know, all these things that all these marks. And I think albums often are like diary entries. Mm. It's not always necessarily as on the surface as that. But sometimes you'll go back to it and go, wow, I didn't realise that how these other themes had crept in that were coming from other places, and there they all are, you know. Definitely. You've sort of sometimes been a lot more open with things than you realise through the music. Like one has often been a lot more open.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I suppose the thing as well I thought was really impressive, not just to be able to articulate those feelings in music, because it's wonderful to be inspired by, but to actually create something that you think justify or finds that spot, I think is really special. Also, I think, were you ever worried about how it would affect your creativity? Because I know before I became a parent, I thought, how do I find my way back to me in this?
Yeah, I was worried, and mostly from the projections of others, like, gosh, you've lived your life so creative, you've done just what you want. You might struggle a bit being a mum, or you might resent her because you can't do.
That's helpful.
And I feel like that's
comment.
A bit of an old fashioned or maybe that comes from people that felt that themselves, but sort of like it did enter my mind and rattle around a bit, and I did sort of feel a bit worried at times, but I definitely wasn't expecting that it would fuel the creativity as much as it did.
Exactly.
You know, I had an album, I did a deck of oracle cards, and I've written a surrealist novella.
Yeah.
And they're all different, like a trilogy of work that all came from that moment. But I think because my creative cogs were so well oiled anyway, it's just who I am now, that it's sort of like, I couldn't really stop doing that. It just added to, I describe it as my heart felt a certain depth, and I'd mined that area for many years and like gone in and out of the strings of my heart, like cleaning them and trying to make sense of things. But then this sort of massive thing happened, and then I felt like fathoms of depth like were added, and there was this whole like place inside of me that I'd never even seen before. So to have that at 40, I was like, this is awesome.
This is great. Yeah. Like, so
people
rich.
People do things on purpose, like have affairs or like move to Italy or become a monk or something just to expand.
Like finding out your house has got this unexpected wing you didn't know attached
exactly.
at all. This whole space. It's wonderful.
It was wonderful, yeah. So I was really grateful to have this extra space, and it wasn't all amazing and perfect, you know, there was a lot of that early on, especially like, who the hell am I? I'm just like going from breastfeeds to naps to, you know, just trying to juggle relationships and my baby, and I felt at times even on my days. I remember like my first day that I took to myself, and I just spent the whole time thinking about my baby, and I was like, oh my God, come on, like, you know. But it just wasn't the right time, and I tried to fight it a bit, and then I just thought, look, it's okay. You know, I will come back to myself eventually. Maybe nature's just, you know, trying to push me at this point to bond and just to be like a slave to this child. But then there's a song, At Your Feet, on the album, which is all about that devotional love and just being sort of fully there at the service of another being.
I know that feeling.
Totally. Yeah. Or like, you know, and I think sometimes about people that care for their elderly parents and like for years, you know, like we go through it for a year or, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
There's that whole sort of like devotional aspect of humans that I think is really so beautiful. And I think we're all sort of grappling to make ourselves feel better all the time and to sort of like get things and put things in and consume things. But what I realise in the act of like being so giving to another human being, it just like there's something in that that fills you up in a different way.
Yeah.
It's very, it sort of like crumbles you.
Yes.
And,
and then rebuild.
And then you rebuild, yeah.
Yeah.
So that was really interesting.
And have you had it yet where you felt, because your little girl's still... She's actually at the age that I think objectively is like my favourite age. I think three is just brilliant.
So funny.
Yeah, so funny.
She just went to Australia and she's come back saying, put your phone away, mate. That's all she...
Put your phone away, mate. That's great.
I want my nighty. Can I have a nighty tonight? And she just like suddenly is Australian. It's so good after
That's
2 weeks.
She's pretty precocious for a 3 year old.
She's really funny.
Mimic. Yeah, yeah. I like it. But have you had it yet? Because I'm trying to think when you've just gotten so little, because the nature of our work allows you to embrace and create this swirl of the drama you want, the atmosphere, setting the scene, the costumes. You know, you've already got your music, so when you do the... I just know that sometimes when I've had that side of what I do and then it's got this juxtaposition of something very mundane and... I don't know, the thing that always pops into my head is a soft play. Just because I feel like in a soft play, it's like all of my character and personality has just been stripped from me. And I just exist to try and spot where they are and keep an eye on some shoes. And that's kind of it.
Yeah.
But sometimes in that, I think with early parenthood, I struggled with that sort of thing quite a lot. Because you realise you're sort of part of this whole... I don't know, club that's been going on for ages, of course, of just being a parent of a small person. But you're just like, oh, but how? What's my version of this? And there isn't really one. No, there you isn't. Just have to sit on the plastic seats and check they haven't, you know, banged into another kid and keep an eye on their shoes.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that, I mean, I'm definitely, this is the first time I've released an album whilst being a mum. And I think... I try to sort of like be present in each thing I'm doing because I feel like it takes very different parts of me to be. It's sort of like having a split personality. I'm just like the music one, you know, I go into that zone and then it's that transitional time between the two. Sometimes you don't have much time to transition. And I think that's when you feel a bit discombobulated or like really bored, you know, and it is boring. I think I've been reading a really interesting book called... Hunt, Gather, Parent, all about a woman who was finding it really boring and difficult to parent in the Western way, where they have child-centric activities and, like, the parents are just, like, you know, slaves to these children where you just, like, provide snacks and take them to play dates and do things.
Exactly. And you're right, that is a very Western thing, isn't it?
It is a bit, because I think she then decided to spend a year with her three-year-old with three different Indigenous cultures. So she went to Mayans and I can't remember the other two, but she, you know, her whole book is about they don't really do that in those cultures. They, if a child is, you know, wants to play or do something, they'll be like, make tortilla with me. Right. Or like, you know, the other day I'm like, Delphi's friends around, I'm just like, they just love like having grown up things. So I was like, okay, so we're going to rub all the cupboards with our cloths. And they were like getting the tea towels out and like shining up the cupboards. I was like, I feel like I'm in Annie or something. Sorry. My child is not a slave. But it was just so much more, easy for me to be there and just, you know, and then they run in the garden, go on the trampoline. And I was, obviously I go to the park with Delphi and do all those birthday parties and stuff. But I've, since reading that, I felt a bit less pressure to go. And they're like, don't do activities that you wouldn't, that you would normally hate doing.
Yeah.
Just for the sake of, because kids just love to be with you and they
so
love
smart,
to,
yes.
They love to be in their little tribe, you know, of course have play dates and stuff. But I generally try to do things that I would at least find a quarter, you know, 25% interesting, or there's something for me there.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I do feel, like you said, there's just, you know, they don't want to, I think she was describing it as like they're her, the kids that she saw as part of this family, so they have five kids. The mum kind of treats it like they're like on a baseball team together. Everyone's mm-hmm. got their role. Everyone can contribute in some way. And mm-hmm. no one ever stands on the side that's not involved in what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And to utilise toddlers' love of helping. Like, can I do that? Can I pick that? Can I help you hang the washing out? I want to stir the thing. I want to crack the egg. Like, Duffy's always asking those things. So I try to kind of involve her as much as I can. And it has alleviated some of that, like, deathly boredom of
and it makes you feel like your personality as a parent can come out as well. I think it sounds like you've kind of reached that quicker than it took me, I think. And I think also, how do you find the actual thing of, are you good at giving yourself permission to actually go off and do what you need to do for your work and give it the space? Have you found that came quite naturally too?
I've been really lucky with my management, because my manager, both my managers have little kids, and they really understand, like, they know when half term's happening because they have to deal with that too. And they've been very helpful in, like, putting the tour, you know, before big holidays, especially because I'm the parent that works freelance, you know, and the other parent has a 9-to-5 job. So if there's ever any holidays, it's up to me to be there.
Right.
And so they're really helpful with that. So it's felt like, it's pretty full on, but my work hours are within when Delphi's at school, and then I am quite good on some days just saying, you know, I need a morning to myself. Like, I need to do the washing, and I need to, I don't know, do like boring admin stuff and go and buy her new socks, or like I need to do a food shop.
Yeah,
it's just like, when do you find the time to do all this stuff? And that's not even like, God, I really would like to go and get a manicure or, you know, or a mani-pedi or something. It's been months. But no, I think when I do have the time to myself, instead of trying to, like, see loads of people and do loads of things, I actually just get in my bed and will read a book or just sit with a cat for like an hour or two.
That sounds nice.
And that is like absolutely just sorts me out.
Like, nurturing.
I keep going for the whole week.
And have you done any gigs yet? You have?
Yeah, we did a tour. It was quite small, but I think last summer, Christine and the Queens did a Meltdown festival, and we played the South Bank, and then
I do remember seeing
around that. Yeah, and that was quite full on, because it was me just on my own with a lot of like contemporary dance and a big mirror that I was like dancing into. It's very like David Bowie-esque. And I was
sounds
holding
fab.
A lot of the show on my own, and I found that physically really overwhelming. I got quite dizzy and I had some weird symptoms, and I think it was stress related.
Depleted, maybe.
Very depleted, yeah. So this time, you're always learning, but I was just like, I need more musicians and a bit more support.
Mm-hmm.
So I've made it that way for this show. And yeah, you're learning, aren't you, what you're capable of and how much energy you've got for things. And I think I overshot the mark a bit.
Yeah, because it is a new thing, and sometimes you're sort of stepping back into yourself and thinking, actually, no, that doesn't quite work in the same way as it did before.
Yeah.
Or it doesn't make me happy in the same way it did.
Totally.
But when you're talking about how it's made you reflect on your childhood, were you always someone, do you have lots of memories of sort of seeking this sort of world to create these, you know, the storytelling and the fantasy?
Yeah.
Is that something you can remember from when you were, I suppose, from when you were in like single digits?
Definitely. I feel like I remember, I mean, I don't know about single digits, because as a little girl, I was obsessed with being outside in nature, and I had little microscope and glass slides of leaves and butterfly wings, and I was part of the ecology club. And like, then as I grew a bit older, my parents divorced, and my godfather, who lived across the road, had a friend that had a horse who, like, was just in a field, and he paid for me, like, he paid the livery of the horse for 2 years. And I looked after this horse, and it was so healing for me, just to, like, I would ride bareback because I was, you know, au naturel. I didn't want to do any, like, dressage stuff or whatever. And we'd just go into the woods, and I'd just ride the horse, like, for an hour after school with my Walkman on.
So how old were you then? This is sort of like in your...
Maybe like 11,
yeah.
12.
Oh, you're so open to all of that then as well, aren't you?
Yeah, oh, my God. You're sort of so romantic, yeah.
Yeah, so romantic, like, seeing yourself, like, where you're headed.
Beauty.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the aspirations and the dreams. And I was in suburbia, and then, like, I just go out into, like, this probably quite small suburban woodland that if I looked at it
in
now.
But
to me, I was, like, on the savannas of Wyoming or something.
I really, really relate to that. You're already the heroine in the story.
Yeah.
Yeah, little misunderstood and wild.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think, you know, and I do think kids have that wild spirit, and if it's allowed to, venture out, and having that time on my own. I mean, my mum was obviously, like, very, very, like, not hands-on in the way that parents are now. I was out for hours on my own every night, and before school I'd go to the horse on my own.
But she was probably so happy because you had a thing that took you out of the house, gave you a place to go,
yeah.
absorbed you. You know, that's kind of what you're hoping for your kids, a little bit, really, that they've got somewhere that... A thing that gives them that headspace and makes them feel
and a
happy
responsibility and... for another being. You
yes.
know, I was responsible for this big animal, and we developed this amazing connection. But yeah, I was thinking today, like, if Delphi was riding horses around a woodland, we didn't have mobile phones in those days. Just gone for like 3 hours, and then just trust she comes home. She didn't, like, get, you know, knocked off by a branch or something.
Yeah.
It's so amazing, isn't it? How
yes.
Like, the paranoia we have nowadays is so much higher.
Oh, it's crazy.
It's really different.
It is. I remember...
That would never happen.
No, I remember I was talking to someone once. Her daughter has just passed her driving test and was driving. And so she was like... So I was following her on Life 360
Google, yeah.
for where she went. I was thinking, really? Like, do you need to do that? Like,
yeah.
when's the bit where you cut the apron
cut the
strings,
cord.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, there's got to be... I think the way that we're encouraged to police everything and be aware of everything is maybe not always the best. But then I guess, you know, I don't want to be the one that says that. And then it's like, well, if you'd been following where they were, they wouldn't have been knocked off their horse, would they?
Exactly. Whoops. Yeah. I think there's something about just like the trust you build with your child and... instilling in them like a feeling that they're not there for you, they're not there to abate your anxiety, they're there to develop confidence and to go out into the world and to not be yours anymore. You know, they'll always be yours, but, you know, it's that thing of like, I want you to be a confident individual that feels brave and strong enough to deal with situations and things. And I think maybe because I was given that, I feel like maybe I do that with Delphi maybe even too much. Like, I'm quite like, just go off and do your thing, you know?
It's instinct, isn't it? Because that's your person and you get to know them so inside out.
Yeah, and she's very like that anyway. She's quite just, let me at them, you know? She's not interested. She checks back on me occasionally, but she'll be like miles away in the park. And I, you know, for me, that I'm trying to sort of practice that thing of not being too anxious about it.
I was reading as well, you were talking about when you were little and you felt like you had certain, like, more masculine, like, character, like, behaviour, and people, it was tried to, like...
Supposedly masculine.
Yes, I know,
yeah.
And I'm quoting how you'd phrased it, but it's not how I would see it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, exactly, supposedly, and it was like the effort was to sort of try and diminish these things. And I think I'm so glad that we don't seem to approach raising daughters in that way anymore.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's a healthier place to be. And I think it's definitely not the same as it used to be, but are there aspects of your childhood that you are actively trying to incorporate, do you think?
I think I didn't realise till recently that my dad's from Pakistan and my mum's English, and we spent several summers there for like 6 weeks at a time. And when Delphi was, when we were living in LA, her first nursery school was a Mexican abuela, like a grandmother with like big boobs and big, you know, big chicken wing, like, cuddly arms. And then her daughter, who was in her 30s, and her daughter, who was 16, who was doing like her MVQ or whatever in childcare. And so Delphi was part of this like Mexican intergenerational like trilogy of women. And I think recently I've realised that there's a bit of a, like, I'm realising that that's so important for Delphi is this sort of cross-cultural experience that I had. I'm not quite sure how to provide that for her because a lot of my Pakistani family aren't there or they've passed away. So I don't really have a connection to there anymore. But as a kid, sort of going to this really hot country with all the smells of like spices and rose and jasmine and sewage and sweat and like dust and rabid dogs.
Yeah, such a cacophony of
it was like so crazy. Yeah, it was such a sensory overload. But
so how old were you when you were going there?
From a baby up till like nine or ten probably. But the you'd be sort of delivered into the arms and bosoms of like 12 cousins and aunties.
Yeah.
Who would whisk me away and like just kiss me all over and put makeup on me and henna on my hands and dress me in silk shalwar kameezes and gold jewellery. And they'd take me to the market and you could get chicks that were like every different colour of the rainbow that had been like dip dyed. You have like a rainbow cage of chicks. And just, you know, I had a pet goat when I was there that they then sacrificed and made a curry out of. And there's like, it was such a, I don't know, it was like such a mythical place to me.
That's got to fed in massively into how you feel about your, where you create what Bat for Lashes is.
Exactly.
That world, because
it's from little drama.
You'd have your, yeah, it's so dramatic, yeah. But it's also all the senses, it's all, and it's romantic, like when you're small, the idea of having like another world that you can go to and everything is like intense and magical, and you know when you're saying about the henna and the sounds and the smells and the family, and then you go back to much more normal, exactly. Like suburban, where your friends aren't. That's not the experience.
That's
that
not what they do. Having. Yeah, it's a different sociological.
Like that's such
construct.
A rich idea.
Yeah,
be able to just dip it. There's another version of me that I don't. You know, that I get to inhabit sometimes. Oh,
yeah,
that's lovely.
And the sort of like the hotness I would describe of their emotions was like very on their slit, you know, when we would arrive or leave, just everyone in tears and like my cheeks had bruises on from being squeezed so hard by like my aunt, like, Booty, I love you so much, you know, like this, oh, like that kind of like, and Delphi's got this, I call it like love aggression.
Oh, yeah.
Where she just pinches me and like, mummy, you know, and like her face shakes.
Yeah, they like shake.
And I feel like that love aggression sort of doesn't die out in their culture. It's like fully there in like people in their, you know, older years. And so I have noticed that I really want that for her. And I think we got a bit of that living in LA with the Mexican culture because they're, you know, there's like, they have parties all the time and barbecues and all the kids up at 11 o'clock, like running around music and they're very cuddly. And, you know, so I really liked the combination of this sort of like wistful English, stiff upper lip, kind of reading Mallory Towers and Anne of Green Gables side of me. And then this like kind of mythological, intense, and with all the religion and the storytelling of that, you know, like very sort of like strange,
a whole other culture,
strange religious culture. Yeah, yeah. I like how that's combined in me to, like you say, creatively. I think that's really helped.
Yeah, that's very rich, that experience. But I think when you have a child, you're looking at the things that have made you who you are, and then you think, well, I'm in a happy spot now with how I feel about being your parent. So what do you need that will give you the same sense of... I want you to help you find your happy thing too.
Yes.
And it's like I have to constantly remind myself that things that work for me, those life experiences, they don't need to be replicated. They don't need to, they will have their own version of everything, and that will be separate to me.
Yeah, because it doesn't have to be the same thing that you provide them, but it just you're learning about what they need. And I think maybe Delphi going to Australia and saying put your phone away, mate. I think she got a really different cultural experience. They live on the beach, like it's sunny, they were naked all the time, you know, and we are planning to spend a bit more time there over, you know, every year. I think she'll get a different kind of thing, but she's got that exotic family that live over there that she just absolutely loves.
That's pretty glamorous as well.
It's pretty glamorous
as a thing to have that as the thing you do as well.
Yeah, yeah. So that's her version, I suppose. But I've put her in forest school. I'll get her on a horse at some point, you know. I think
is there a local ecology club for...
Hopefully. She'll be like, Mum, this rabbit.
I was in something called the Woodcroft Folk. Did you ever heard of that?
No, it sounds very like 70s hippie.
It was so 70s hippie. Nice. That was very like out in nature, hiking.
Yeah, lovely. Yeah.
I did really like that sort of thing. And I like the fact that it's quite quirky as well. I very rarely meet a fellow ex-Woodcroft folker.
Woodcroft folkin.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you miss nature, or are you like, do you like being in the city?
I'm born and bred Londoner.
Okay.
So
just makes sense.
For me, there's greenery out there.
Yeah.
Richard would have taken the kit. I think we would have moved to the countryside if I hadn't been such a city girl. Mm. I've always made it very clear that I won't leave London. And I think it's good that one of us just really knows.
One of us just gets our way, yeah.
Yeah, completely. Well, I said he's welcome to go to the countryside. I just will not be going. I just won't be there. But then my mum lives like 7 minutes down the road.
That's everything. Yeah.
My eldest boy's moved in there now too. So, yeah, he lives with his grandma, which is very sweet.
That is so nice. Yeah.
And so it's all, my family live here.
That's
my brother's here, my sister's here.
Yeah.
So for me, this is that. And if they weren't all here, it would be different.
Definitely. Yeah.
But yeah, I do sometimes think kids make so much sense in nature. So I do sometimes feel like I've been a bit mean with that, really. Mm. I want to know, I was kind of hoping you might bring your tarot cards with you.
Oh,
I just don't know much about tarot.
Oh, I wish
it sounds incredible.
I could do your reading.
Yeah, maybe another time.
Another time, yeah. Well, they're not based on the tarot, they're oracle. There's a difference between tarot and oracle, but tarot is sort of the traditional pack with all the suits and the major arcana cards and stuff. So that holds a very special mystery to
it. Is that something you grew up with, or is this something you just got into later?
No, I did grow up with that. I mean, I was obsessed with like practical magic and, you know, all the sort of witchy stuff when I was younger, and I meditated, or like I tried to connect with Kurt Cobain's spirit and stuff.
Oh yeah.
So I felt
River
like
Phoenix, you know.
Yeah,
River Phoenix. I wrote my
one
letter,
or the other,
out the window. Oh yeah.
So I quickly, I was into like the incense and the tarot cards as early as I could be. And over the years, I feel like I've become quite a good tarot reader, only because tarot reading is so much about intuiting the person and then seeing a story within the cards and their relationship to each other. It's really about it. It's quite a mystical process, but I feel like if you're good at it, you can just clarify something for the person that they know inside themselves, but they're not quite getting it reflected back.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
But I do think that what comes up sometimes is shockingly on point. And people that I've given readings to who I've never met before are just like blown away. So I do believe there's some sort of universal intelligence at work. But the Oracle cards are sort of a matriarchal deck, and they're all based on mythical archetypes and characters of my own making.
Mm.
But the meanings and the sort of like descriptions and the methods and rituals behind them all are based a lot on methods that I've used over the years for my creativity and for my sort of like delving deeper into myself and removing blocks, or like healing my inner child, or, you know. There's a lot about honouring like metamorphosis and change and cycles in life and the creative cycle and how things die and are reborn. And it covers quite a spectrum. There's 40 cards for the year that I had Delphi, and I illustrated it all and wrote the guidebook. And I feel like it's this nice thing that's just gone out into the world. It's doing its own
work.
So
lovely. I think it's really lovely. I love all that. And everything comes from the same place with you. So it's all part of the same world.
Yeah.
Are you someone that makes plans? Have you got plans for what you do after this album thing?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
That's
cool. So how far in the future do you go?
Well, I'm really excited because I've wanted to do a play for a long time.
Ah.
And I think this novella that I've written, I'm going to transform into a play. And I think September I can start research and development, which like makes me so excited.
That is exciting.
You get choreographers, set designers, direct, you know, anyone that you think is amazing to come and spend a week with you hashing out ideas and workshopping stuff.
That's incredible.
It's like, that's heaven on earth to me. So I'm so excited because I feel like I couldn't have really done it before this. And I've reached like a mature enough age to step into that sort of like theatre director or that kind of role.
Yeah.
And I think it takes a minute to get to something like that. So it's quite exciting. So I feel like that's something I'd like to start after this tour.
It feels like all your creative juices are really like...
You're pumping.
Yeah, in a good, really good way.
Yeah, a really good way. Yeah. Yeah, it's got to go into something. I mean, I'd like to have more kids, but I'm probably getting on a bit for that. So it probably just has to go into like... there's, you know that thing when they're three and you're like, I need to do it again.
Yeah, nature's quite wily. Because you start off and you're like...
never again.
Don't even ask me. And then they get to like... for me, it was always like two and a half. Yeah.
And I'd be like, yeah.
And actually with my youngest, I had to really kind of... I was very aware of it. Like, no, just stop. What are you going to do? Like, it's got to finish at some point.
Yeah.
You know? And that's, you know, not even thinking about if you'll be lucky enough to have another baby, but just like, oh, stop it. You know, like, I was kind of almost finding it a bit like... oh, my brain's so predictable.
Yeah, there's like a hormonal manipulation.
Yeah, absolutely.
That evolution has designed perfectly to make you feel like you're missing something.
And sometimes kids as well at that age start saying, oh yeah. I want a baby, or they say a baby, went, oh, can we have one of those babies? And can we buy this for our baby? And I'm like, what are you talking about?
Delphi said to me the other day, Mummy, when I get older, you can go back in my tummy and then you can be my baby.
Oh, wow.
I was like, I don't know if that works like that. might be a bit painful, but you can have a baby. So I'm gonna have a baby. So I think like she is expressing it in that way. Aww. Which is really interesting.
Well, there's a lot in your music I think that talks about this. You say like the spiral of it all is sort of continuing. I think in Dream of Delphi it almost like was hypnotizing me, the sound of it. I kept seeing like a circle just going around and around.
It's like the babushka dolls, you know, like the doll within the doll.
Yes.
And the doll.
Yeah.
I feel like that's, you know, because she, that whole, that fact of when Delphi was in my tummy,
she's already got the eggs. I know,
potential granddaughters in my tummy. I just find that so,
that is wild, isn't
wild.
It nature's pretty clever with all that stuff. And I think your music's beautiful and I love this album. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Fun stuff. It's gorgeous. Aww. Can't wait to see it live and explore it more.
Thanks,
thank you so much.
Thank you.
Gorgeous Natasha talking about her beautiful album, Dream of Delphi. I mentioned during our chat there that I thought some of her lyrics, I could just quote them and they would tell the story in themselves because they're so beautifully put. And there's a song called Letter to My Daughter. And I just thought I'll read you the lyrics because they're so pretty. Your life an echo, my darling, of all before. Your life an echo, my darling, of all to come. And yes, you're a song. Isn't that lovely? I hope my kids know that they're songs too. What a song. It reminded me a little bit of the Khalees song, A Cappella. That's a very beautiful song about how having her child kind of put music in the world. It's a lovely way to articulate an emotion, I think. And such a pleasure to talk to Natasha. What a lovely, lovely woman. And wish her all the best with the new record. I can't wait to come and see it live. I bet it'll be absolutely gorgeous. And, it'd be really good fun. So, what am I going to do now? Oh, I guess I better wake some more people up. It's like 9:30 in the morning here on Sunday, but I've only got 50% of the children awake. I've got an 8-year-old who really loves sleeping in. I mean, don't get me wrong, so do I. And then, obviously, the teenager has now hit that bit as well. So there's always this bit in the morning where it's kind of like just me and my 12-year-old's quite an early riser and the little one. So we've just been downstairs and I'm thinking, should I wake them, the other ones? What do you reckon? Or do I let them sleep? Then bedtimes get all kind of disjointed, don't they? Yeah, I think I know what to do.
Anyway, and I better pack for a gig. I haven't done a full band live show in, it's got to be about a month, actually. I think we did our last one at the end of the tour. And I feel like I need to blow some cobwebs off. It's funny, you know, when you're gigging, I don't know, a couple of times a week, you get so in the rhythm of it, but it only takes a couple of weeks for you to start feeling like, oh, what's that again? So, and because Richard and Kieran, who plays keyboards, are away on tour with The Feeling, I've got a couple of chaps, one of which has done the gig before and one of which hasn't. So that adds an extra layer as well of kind of, I better be really sure of what I'm doing because they will be doing it for the first time. Wish me luck. But it should be fun, actually. I'm actually playing this thing called the Cheltenham Jazz Festival, which feels a little bit incongruous, but I'm just hoping that the organisers and the people that come to watch do understand that I'm not specifically a jazz act. Although I guess, actually, if we play things like a little bit like do-do-do-do-do-do, we could just say, and that's jazz. So maybe if there's going to be a gig where you've got a couple of people who don't know the music as well as the rest of us, then that's a jazz is the time. We could just pretend we're kind of like deconstructing and breaking it down and taking it somewhere else. Nice. That's no disrespect to jazz players, by the way. I do understand that there is an actual form to that, but just in context of my own music, wonky, wonky pop could be maybe the jazz version of things. I tell you what, next week I'll report back how that plan went. Listen, have a really good week. I hope the sun is shining wherever you are. And yeah, thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Claire Jones for producing, to Ella May for the beautiful artwork, to Richard for editing. And I have another lovely guest for you next week. See you soon. Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.